Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, the Dow hits 16,000 as median income in New York City drops by $3,000 a year, according to the Census Bureau. We will ask why the disconnect and look at a new WNYC map of median income neighborhood by neighborhood in New York City. Also today, whoever is fixing the Obamacare website might also take a peek at the statin calculator. After the big announcement last week of new guidelines for who should take cholesterol-lowering drugs, the Heart Health Establishment has egg whites on its face for blowing the math, according to some researchers. We will see how they're correcting their work on today's show, or if the leaders of the Heart Health Establishment think the work even needs to be corrected. But first, Tuesday morning politics. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is trying to change the way sexual assault is prosecuted in the military by changing the way every crime is prosecuted in the military, removing them from the chain of command and into the hands of independent prosecutors. Politico's Darren Samuelson is here to explain why Gillibrand apparently has to include all crimes to get at the problem of military rape. There's some unusual political coalitions here, too, that include Ted Cruz and Rand Paul on Gillibrand's side, but John McCain and Democrat Carl Levin opposed. Hi, Darren. Welcome to WNYC.
Hey, thanks for having me.
First, by way of background, the number of reported sexual assaults in the military is truly astonishing. One stat I've seen is that a woman in uniform is more likely to be raped by a fellow soldier than to be killed by an enemy in combat. Another, the Pentagon says about 3,500 sexual assaults were reported last year to military brass, and everyone recognizes this as a massive problem. Here is former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta in the Oscar-nominated documentary about the problem called Invisible War.
I totally share your concerns. We have to have zero tolerance for any kind of sexual assaults in the military.
Leon Panetta, the former Defense Secretary. And get this, folks, under the current rules, military commanders may overrule jury verdicts in sexual assault cases, and one can be convicted of sexual assault and still get an honorable discharge. So Gillibrand wants to reverse those things, plus remove prosecution of military sexual assault from the chain of command altogether. Darren, how do they deal with it now when a rape or other criminal sexual assault is alleged?
Sure. It goes through the military's unique criminal justice system, which is kind of set up around World War II, and it's been used ever since. And it basically, in some respects, it looks a little bit like the civilian system, where there are investigators who will look into an allegation or look into a crime, make a recommendation for a case to even be what they call an Article 32 pretrial process. It looks a little bit like our grand jury preliminary system, where they just decide whether to recommend to file charges. If indeed recommendations are made and then the commander of the unit, which is a key point here, decides to actually proceed with a case, then we go to a court-martial. Court-martial can look a little bit like a civilian system with a judge or a jury, depending on what the defendant wants, presiding over the case. Testimony is presented, witnesses are deposed, questions are asked in a public trial, and then ultimately a decision is handed down. But then, as you pointed out, the commander does have the authority at that point to overturn that jury conviction, and we saw that happen a couple of times earlier this year, last year, that prompted a lot of the outrage as well that's going on right now.
So what would Senator Gillibrand's bill actually change? How would the cases then be handled?
Sure. With Senator Gillibrand's proposal, you would take it out of the commander, that commander who makes that initial decision on whether to prosecute a case, as well as that endpoint in the disposition after a case is decided, and puts it into the hands of a military lawyer, an expert on this actual issue, on the issue of whether to prosecute or not prosecute, who understands the evidence. And they're the ones who would make these decisions. A much more, as she says, fair way that would actually, she thinks, encourage reporting of these cases by victims who feel like right now they don't want to even bring the case forward or let investigators know because they're afraid that nothing is going to happen, or they're also afraid in a significant number of these cases it is a commander who is the, you know, the perpetrator, and they're afraid that they're going to bring the case forward and then the perpetrator is going to be in a position to decide whether justice is brought. So she creates a whole separate military justice system for major military crimes where lawyers are the ones that make these key decisions.
And here's more on why removing these cases from the chain of command is a path to reducing sexual assault in the military from Senator Gillibrand Sunday on ABC This Week.
The 3,000 cases that were reported, 70% were violent rapes and sexual assaults. And even more disturbing, of those 3,000 cases that were reported, 62% of the victims were retaliated against. So what we have is a system where the command climate is so broken that if you are raped, you are likely going to be retaliated against for reporting that rape.
Or, Darren, and I think you were getting at this a minute ago, a less polite way to put it is that the person who rapes you in the military is fairly likely to be your commanding officer. So chain of command reporting really can't exactly work.
Yeah, I mean, that's the argument that Gillibrand is making very forcefully right now. She's going from senator to senator, trying to, you know, pull together the necessary votes that she would need to actually get this passed in the Senate. There is a strong counterargument that the Pentagon, of course, is making, that if you were to take this out of the chain of command, you really disrupt the authority that commanders have just across everything that the military is all about. It is about the chain of command. And if you remove the commanders from this, you know, military justice decision-making process, you know, they counter that you're basically making, the troops feel like they can get away with a lot more things that, you know, if they think that the decisions are not even going to be made by their commander, but by some lawyer outside the system.
But I'm not sure I understand that argument. Why, just because something like sexual assault or other criminal activity could be prosecuted by independent prosecutors, does it remove authority from the commanders to tell soldiers and sailors and et cetera, go do this, lift this here, carry that over there, go deploy over here? I'm not sure I understand the relationship.
It's an argument that the military is making very forcefully, saying that, you know, this is a cohesive unit, that everything happens in the unit, that, you know, you bring all of your problems to your commander. And in this case, this is another example where a commander, you know, is the one who makes the decisions on who, you know, is in trouble and what things should go into their files as the troops move from place to place around the country. It is a very forceful argument. It's one that the Pentagon is making. They're the ones that say that, you know, they're the experts on their own military justice system, and that they're actually, you know, questioning Senator Gillibrand's authority as an expert on this particular topic and saying that she's not someone who truly understands the way things go inside the military. I mean, it is a very spirited debate that we have seen here for the last 8-9 months leading up to the debate and floor vote, you know, which is possible this week, but, you know, might actually get punted beyond and into after Thanksgiving.
As we talk with Darren Samuelson from Politico about Senator Kirsten Gillibrand's bill to remove sexual assault prosecutions from the chain of command in the military. Here's more testimony to that effect, to the effect that it doesn't work to have it in the chain of command. This is from former Marine officer and Iraq war veteran Ariana Clay in the documentary Invisible War.
This is an organization that gives commanders an unbelievable amount of power, and I felt it as a lieutenant in Iraq. It's scary. You appoint the prosecution, you appoint the defense, you appoint the investigator, you're in charge of the police force, you're in charge of the community. You own everything. You are a judge, you are a jury, you are an executioner.
So that from the documentary Invisible War. And I want to get back to this question of whether she's qualified to come up with a solution to this that you were referring to a minute ago. John McCain, bless his heart, one of the opponents on this, has, I think, been the lead senator suggesting that Gillibrand is not qualified to design this fix. Imagine a man disagreeing with a woman executive by calling her unqualified. We've never heard of that before. In this case, because she's never served in uniform, here is Senator McCain.
I'm the only member of the United States Senate who was actually in command, okay? And I respect Senator Gillibrand's views and her advocacy, but I do not believe she has the background or experience.
Senator McCain, and here is Gillibrand responding to that clip on ABC This Week.
Our job as senators and as member of Congress is the vital constitutional responsibility of providing oversight and accountability over the Department of Defense. It's actually our job, and I am the Personnel Subcommittee Chairman. This is my job. And third, this is an epidemic that has grown to such proportions, and the military has said for 25 years, since Dick Cheney was the Secretary of Defense, that there is zero tolerance for sexual assault in the military, and last year alone, we had 3,000 reported cases of sexual assault.
Gillibrand, very restrained there, I think, after being called unqualified by John McCain. Darren Samuelson from Politico with us. Darren, Senator McCain was making the argument in that clip that maybe he's the only one qualified to come up with a fix for this because he's the only one who's been a commander in the military. But as far as I know, he was never a woman in the military. And as far as I know, he was never raped in the military. So maybe his experience leaves him unqualified to design a fix for this issue. Is anyone suggesting that?
No one's suggesting that John McCain is unqualified, I think, to try and come up with a fix here. I mean, there are a lot of senators who have been working on this issue over the course of the last many months. I mean, if you look back over time, I think the Congress has been kind of missing in action on this issue. There have been very small incremental fixes as this issue has popped up from year to year. It's come up over the last many decades, going back to the early 90s when we had the Tailhook scandal out in Nevada. But here we are now at a point where Senator Gillibrand really has been leading on this one particular very hot-button question of removing the chain of command. It is important to note that what is in the underlying Senate legislation that is on the floor right now does have about two dozen things in it to try and get at the issue of sexual assault that I think pretty much widely is agreed upon, including, as we were talking about before, no longer is a commander going to have the authority to overturn a jury conviction. It is going to be a crime going forward for anyone to retaliate against a victim who speaks out. And there's about two dozen other proposals that are in the Senate bill. It does come down to this one particular question about the chain of command. And while McCain is making the argument that Senator Gillibrand is not qualified, I've heard that argument from others as well. Senator Claire McCaskill from Missouri, a Democrat, in fact, the only woman Democrat among 16 Senate Democrats who are female who opposes Gillibrand and is a former prosecutor from the Kansas City area, she's making that exact same point. She's told me a couple of times in the last couple of days that she's someone who is a former prosecutor who actually worked on these kinds of cases in the civilian courts, saying that she is the only one with this level of experience to do this. Now, there are other former prosecutors in the Senate, Kelly Ayotte. You have Sheldon Whitehouse from Rhode Island, a former U.S. attorney. Ted Cruz is a former solicitor general from Texas. So there are a lot of people with strong legal backgrounds in this Congress who are staking their claim on having some understanding of how to deal with this issue and who are central players in this debate.
Listeners, I wonder if any of you who have served in the military have any opinion about what would happen to authority in general of commanders if this were to be taken away from them, the ability to have a final say over who gets prosecuted or convicted for sexual assault allegations. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Men, women who've been in the military, what do you think? 212-433-9692, or for that matter, if you've been a prosecutor or have other qualifications, 212-433-9692. We'll have time for just a few phone calls on this, so if you call right in, you'll get right on. And on the politics that you were just describing, Darren, Gillibrand may or may not have the votes to pass her version of the bill, and it seems like it's a very unusual coalition that includes Ted Cruz, who you mentioned, on her side, and Rand Paul on her side, and with John McCain opposed to her, is Carl Levin, chair of the Armed Services Committee, who's a pretty liberal Democrat. So why would it line up this way?
It's a fascinating Senate breakdown that I you seldom see. Maybe on some civil liberties issues might you see something like this. But it's really fascinating. I think in some respects you have John McCain and Carl Levin, Claire McCaskill, Democrats opposing Gillibrand, in part because I think, you know, they serve, they're long-serving members of the Armed Services Committee. They have very close ties to the Pentagon. They would say that they don't take their marching orders from the Pentagon, but they are ones that are not likely to rock the boat on some issues when the Pentagon wants something. And the Pentagon strongly opposes what Kirsten Gillibrand is doing. Interestingly enough, and we had an article in Politico just a couple of days ago about this, talking about how President Obama has really been silent on this Gillibrand question, hasn't said one way or another which way he leans. Chuck Hagel, his defense secretary, is opposed to it, as, of course, are all the military brass. And then you have President Obama, who has said he wants this scourge eliminated. So there is this very interesting contrast here between the White House and the Pentagon. But coming back to the Senate dynamics, you have then, you know, some of the Tea Party firebrands like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul on Kirsten Gillibrand's side. Also, Chuck Grassley is on her side. He's someone who has often had no qualms about putting a finger in the eye of the Pentagon. So I think you have people maybe who don't have as strong ties to doing what the Pentagon wants on the side of Gillibrand, and then people who have maybe fallen more in lockstep with the what the Defense Department wants on Gillibrand's side. But it's not even as clean as that. It has been a fascinating debate to watch, and we still have about two dozen senators who haven't taken sides one way or another. We might find out here in the next couple of days if they do. As I said before, though, this is the United States Senate, which has been known to get locked up just in deciding over naming post offices. So I think here we could have a problem where we might not even get to a vote on this bill just because of some overarching issues that have just brought the Senate to a gridlock standstill in recent days, in recent months, recent years. So a little bit frustrating, I think, on a lot of people's parts that this might ultimately not be resolved here this week in the Senate as much as we thought it would.
And just explain to me this issue that you referred to in your article about how in order to take sexual assault out of the chain of military command, they would have to take all kinds of criminal allegations against soldiers out of the chain of military command. Do I understand that right?
That's right, yeah. So Kirsten Gillibrand last week, in her search for 60 votes, and she is, you know, sitting around 50, 52 right now, floated the idea of just focusing on sexual assault and rape and leaving everything else, you know, of the major crime variety from murder to manslaughter to theft, leaving it status quo in the current system. She floated that, and she got a huge backlash from a lot of the supporters who have been working with her, the military criminal justice experts, from victims advocacy groups that were worried that if you tried to separate out just sexual assault and rape into its own system, women would face questions about whether they're getting special treatment. There was even one victim advocate who called it the idea that it would be pink courts that would be created just for women. Now, it is important to note, remember, that sexual assault, actually half or a little bit more than half of the victims are actually men, and that seldom gets talked about here, is, you know, half of the victims are men. Obviously, there's a lot more shame involved if you're a male who's been sexually assaulted and just bringing forward and admitting to that, telling the investigators about it, you know, pushing for a prosecution of that. So that's why we often hear a lot more about women here. But as we look at this debate and what Gillibrand was thinking about doing, I should say that on that ABC on Sunday, she pulled back from that idea after getting the pushback from the victim advocates. There might even have been some of her own supporters on Capitol Hill who were a little bit worrisome about separating them out. And now she's back to her original proposal of dealing with all military crimes together.
And we should say that under-discussed fact that the majority, I saw the Pentagon stat on that, it's about 52% of sexual assault victims in the military are men, and that's because the overwhelming percentage of people in the military are still men, and so to some degree there's man-on-man, it's overwhelmingly man-on-man, not woman-on-man sexual assault when it occurs to men. When it happens to men in the military, but of course the percentage chance that you will be sexually assaulted if you are a woman in the military is higher than if you are a man. So I think people can hold those various stats in their head at the same time. Don in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Don.
All right, nice to hear from you.
And to hear from you.
I was a two-year ROTC second lieutenant, and during 1 year of it, I was in Korea, and I was the battalion defense counsel as an additional responsibility, just handling a few cases. In one case, I got a man off from something which was quite a surprise, and when I was reading up to defend the next fellow, one of the career officers said to me, don't waste your time. If the guy wasn't guilty, the company commander wouldn't have brought the charges in the first place. And that was pretty much the attitude, is that The company commanders have so much discretion, and the other people on the court-martial are fellow officers.
So it sounds like you would be in favor of taking this out of the chain of command.
Absolutely. Definitely the sexual assault cases against women, certainly.
And then in your experience, what would happen to their authority otherwise? Because that's the argument against, that they would lose the ability to be effective as commanders for ordinary non-criminal things if they were to lose this power.
I don't really understand that. That really doesn't make sense to me. I mean, they are still all-powerful in every other way, and this would just be, avoiding the chance of a grievous wrong.
Thank you, Don. I appreciate your call. Patrice in Philadelphia, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. Good morning. My name is Patrice. I'm a former psychologist for the VA. I am no longer employed. I retired.
Mm-hmm.
I treated so many people, men and women, who were now retired, who were now no longer working in these armed services. They were raped or molested in other ways. These are both men and female. And even after they brought their case to the higher-ups, they still ended up carrying on their duties in the same company as their perpetrator. Nothing was done. Men, people don't realize how many men have been brutally raped in the military.
And again, as we were saying before, though a woman in the military is more likely to be the victim of rape or other sexual assault, most of the incidents are male-on-male, just because the military is so overwhelmingly male. So you've treated some of them, too, as a psychologist.
Oh, I've treated so many of them. And the effects are devastating. Besides the post-traumatic stress disorder that follows.
Patrice, stay there for 1 second. Let me play you another clip from the documentary Invisible War. This is a woman who was raped in the military, explaining a particular thing about her experience.
I don't know anybody who's actually been raped and been able to stay in the military if they reported it.
I wanted to stay in. I loved the job that I did. They made me who I was. I still wanted to do those things because that's what did make me proud, and they stripped me of everything that I did have, and it was like that was my only chance of being proud anymore. And then they just hand me my papers, and then I was...
If I have a difficult time with anything, it's about the fact that I had an almost 10-year career, which I was very invested in, and I gave that up to report a sex offender who was not even put to justice or put on the registry, and he's probably doing the same thing right now.
So that was a montage, actually, of several women from Invisible War. But Patrice, the point there was that it was the women who were raped and reported the rapes who then were either discharged or felt that they had to leave the military because it wasn't going to be comfortable to stay, whereas some of the perpetrators were able to stay in and even leave with honorable discharges under the rules that would be changed in this bill. Have you heard stories that back that up?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Many of the women who were raped left under severe circumstances. Many left under a medical discharge because of the mental health issues. They could no longer, they couldn't work in the same company as these people, as their perpetrator. So they would leave with less than honorable discharges.
Why less than honorable? What would make it less than honorable?
It was, as I should say, it was honorable with medical. I forget the exact terminology.
I see. So with medical reasons.
Yes, yes. In other words, they're still putting some kind of fault on the victim.
Yes.
And as that other woman said, she could no longer serve. She was forced to to leave the military because of the situation that she was put in. And the perpetrator was able to stay.
Patrice,
carrying on his probably vicious attack.
on somebody else. Patrice in Philadelphia, former VA psychologist, thank you for chiming in. And Darren Samuelson from Politico, part of that is one thing that would change in the various versions of this bill, right, which is that anybody who is found guilty of a sexual assault in the military could not get an honorable discharge. I mean, I can't even believe we're talking about this as a controversy or that this goes on, that after that they could even conceivably get an honorable discharge, but that's addressed in the bill, right?
Yes, that is correct. That is one of the things that was put in the bill earlier on in the process during the markups in committee. Yeah, that was something that was, you know, uniformly agreed upon. And again, yeah, you're kind of hitting on a point as you were watching some of these proposals that were put into the bill. There was a lot of slapping of the head. You couldn't believe that some of these things were not already policy. But it looks like at least if the Senate bill passes and then obviously passes a joint negotiation with the House and then President Obama signs it, it would become law.
One more call. Reuben, a retired staff sergeant in St. Yes. Albans, Queens. Reuben, thank you for calling in. You're on WNYC.
Yes. Senator McCain, as a commander, should know that in the military, every senior person, whether it be an officer corps or enlisted, has to do everything in his or her power to protect his troops at all costs. The troops' health, welfare, and safety is in the hands of the commander. That is that is the top priority. So there should be no excuse about allowing these men to physically and emotionally assault these women.
Did you ever
and men as well.
See it or see how it was dealt with when you were in?
No, I never had that experience at all. But I know I've heard men, some men say that women shouldn't be there. They should be at home making babies. So there are a lot of men who don't want to see women in the military.
Reuben, thank you for your call. And we will see where this goes on the Senate floor. Darren Samuelson from Politico covering Senator Gillibrand's bill and the other versions with respect to sexual assault in the military. Darren, thanks a lot. Oh, you know, tell me one other thing. You said 60 votes. 60 votes, not 51? Is somebody threatening to filibuster this?
Yes, we've had a couple of threats to filibuster this from Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, himself a former Air Force JAG who I believe he teaches at the JAG school now, is threatening to filibuster. And we've also heard Senator Inhofe indicate he's the ranking member, the top Republican on the Armed Services Committee from Oklahoma, also threatening to filibuster this proposal. So as is customary in the Senate these days, you're going to need 60 votes on pretty much anything. Kirsten Gillibrand does have, as I said, I think she's got 48 public supporters. Cory Booker was the last night who announced on Twitter that he supports her from New Jersey. She's probably got a couple more senators in her pocket that she's relying upon, but she doesn't have 60, and that's what's happening right now here in the Capitol is she's working the vote. So, of course, our John McCain and Claire McCaskill and Carl Levin on the other side. So it's been a fascinating lobbying campaign to watch here in the last couple of weeks.
And that's the news. Darren Samuelson from Politico. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Coming up next, folks, the Dow hit 16,000 as median income in New York City drops by $3,000 a year. We will ask why the disconnect and look at a new WNYC map of median income neighborhood by neighborhood in the city. In fact, while we're taking the break, why don't you go to our website, if you can do that from where you are, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And we're going to look at this new WNYC map of median income neighborhood by neighborhood. You can actually click on your neighborhood and you'll see there are some neighborhoods of New York City where median income has gone up in the last 3 years, others where it's gone down. And it's going to be a fascinating comparison. Stay with us.